Blog Talk Radio.
God damn it.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
We're going to rock this show out. It's the Patriot Nation Radio Show. It's Thursday. It's 8:09. We're a little delay. We're a little behind. Please forgive us. We are ready to rock and roll.
Thank you for listening to Patriot Nation Radio, 347-637-3942.
Attention conservatives. Big social media is targeting conservatives like you and me in an effort to silence us and the truth. The free speech social media that you have waited for is here at LibertyRush.com. No longer do you have to be distracted by fake news. Join the war on fake news at LibertyRush.com. The official alternative with no libtard rhetoric. Guaranteed. LibertyRush.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Bray, America's favorite patriotic rocker, and you are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Network.
Yes, indeed, folks. You want to check out DaveBrayUSA.com. He's got all kinds of things there, merchandise, tour dates, and Music on a Mission Storyteller Edition, which is out now. And, of course, you heard LibertyRush.com. That's the social media platform without the libtarded rhetoric that just makes you want to, you know, go nuts. Maybe throw stuff around the room and punch holes in the sheetrock. I don't know. They're crazy. The border is unbelievable. Afghanistan is a tragedy. Joe Biden is a bumbling fool. Trump won. And now, because of the cheating and the scandals, we have Joe Biden. We have a pandemic that's raging despite the vaccine, shipping illegal aliens all over the country without vaccines, without being tested, sick, saying 20% of the illegal aliens coming across the border have COVID-19. And at last count, I think they said, we're at, like a million? So we got 200,000 COVID patients just released into the country. With no vaccine, no quarantine, nothing. Meanwhile, they're pounding vaccine mandates down the throats of the American people. Turns out, folks, that the constitutional freedoms that Americans used to enjoy are now enjoyed by illegal aliens, and you get no constitution. You zip your lip, shut the hell up, sit down, be quiet, and let the Democrats tell you what to do. This is where we are in America today. It's really sad. These vaccine mandates, folks, the vaccine is really horrifying. I hate to tell you, the vaccine is horrifying. And why anybody would even think to get it is beyond me. The vaccine is no good. They do not report in the mainstream media all of the adverse effects that are coinciding with this vaccine. Or these vaccines. The people are dying. There's different levels of death that I hear. You know, who knows which ones are true or which ones are false. I have no clue. There's a gentleman. His name is Geert Van den Bosch. He received his DVM from the University of Ghent, Belgium. Has a PhD degree in virology from the University of Hohenheim, Germany. He held adjunct faculty appointments at universities in Belgium and Germany. After his career in academia, Geertz joined several vaccine companies, GSK Biological, Novartis Vaccines, Solvay Biological, to serve various roles in vaccine research and development as well as in late vaccine development. Geertz then moved on to join the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's Global Health Discovery Team in Seattle as a senior program officer. He then worked with the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization in Geneva as senior Ebola program manager. At the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, he tracked efforts to develop an Ebola vaccine. He also represented GAVI, which is, of course, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization. So GAVI is the abbreviation. GAVI is fora with other partners, including the World Health Organization, to review progress on the fight against Ebola and build plans for global pandemic preparedness. Back in 2015, Geertz scrutinized and questioned the safety of the Ebola vaccine that was used in Ring vaccine trials conducted by the World Health Organization in Guinea. His critical scientific analysis and report on the data published by the World Health Organization in Lancet in 2015 was sent to all international health and regulatory authorities involved in Ebola vaccination. After working for GAVI, Geertz joined the German Center for Infection Research in Cologne as the head of the Vaccine Development Office. He is at present primarily serving as a biotech vaccine consultant while also conducting his own research on natural killer cell-based vaccines. The guy is no joke. He's the real deal. He recently had an interview, and it was captured by our good friend, Del Bigtree. And he explains a little bit about specific and non-specific antibodies. I keep telling people to try and listen to this and get some information on this. So I'm just going to play. It's a little bit long. It's 17 minutes. That gives me time to kick back, sip my coffee, and watch this video again from my good friend Del Bigtree. He's been on the show a few times, and he is legit. He is the producer of the movie Vaxxed. And he is the producer of the hit TV show, The Doctors, if you might remember that daytime show that aired a while back. That was a huge success and spawned the careers of people like Dr. Oz. So Del Bigtree's no joke. As long as he surrounds himself with experts, and he does great research. And so I'm going to play an excerpt of an interview from Geertz, and then Del explains also specific and non-specific antibodies.
One thing that Gansett has happened this week, there is a world-renowned vaccine creator that went over his LinkedIn and put out a letter to every single professional in the world, essentially telling them we must stop the vaccination program immediately. This man could not be more pro-vaccine. In fact, he may be one of the most highly ranked and talented vaccine creators in the world. Let's take a look at the resume of the man that is screaming at the top of the mountain right now. This is Geert van den Bosch, PhD. He was at GSK Biological, at Novartis Vaccines and Diagnostics. He was the director, research program leader, and head of adjuvant. Solvay Biological, global project director of the influenza vaccine. For the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, he was a senior program officer, global health vaccine discovery. For Global Alliance for Vaccine Immunization, GAVI, he was the program manager. And at Univac, he was the chief innovation and scientific officer. He's also at the German Center for Infectious Research, head of the Vaccine Development Office, and at Verico, he was the managing director. This guy is anything but an anti-vaxxer. He is as pro-vaccine as you can get, yet there is something that has got him terrified. He did an interview. I think this interview is so perfect that I'm going to do something we rarely do here on the High Wire. We're going to go through the interview as it appeared. But let us walk through what I believe may prove to be the most important interview in the history of mankind. Let's get started.
Fact is that these long-lived antibodies, which have high specificity, of course, for the virus, they outcompete our natural antibodies because they're natural antibodies. They have a very broad spectrum, but they have low affinity, right? The specific antibody will still continue to outcompete your natural antibody. And that is a huge problem, because I was saying just a few minutes ago, these natural antibodies, they provide you with broad protection. This protection is, yes, it is variant non-specific. It doesn't matter what variant you get. It doesn't even matter what type of coronavirus is coming in. It will protect you. Unless, of course, you suppress this level of innate immunity, or it is, for example, outcompeted by long-lived specific antibodies. And so it's not like, okay, you missed it. Okay, let's try again. No, you did some harm. I mean, this is different from drugs. Immunizing somebody is installing a new software on your computer. Don't forget, I mean, these antibodies, they will be recalled every single time you're encountering a coronavirus. You cannot just erase this. So this is very serious.
This is not like a drug. This is very serious. This is, he uses the term long-lived antibodies. I'm going to use sort of a football way to describe. Now, I think this video is pretty clear, but I really want to make sure that we all get this, because I actually learned something this week that I wasn't fully aware of, and now it is crystal clear. But let me see if I can help make it crystal clear for anybody that's sort of thinking about what he said. Now, here's what he is describing. If you ever, you know, played any sport, soccer, football, hopefully this makes some sense to you. But on our team, in our immune system, we have what are called non-specific antibodies. They have, he called it, broad spectrum, low affinity. They don't care who is coming across. In this case, let's look at the other team. Let's say these are all variants of coronavirus. We have the A variant, F, T, R, L, Y, X, okay? Now, it doesn't matter who gets the ball in this case. When we have non-specific, anyone that comes across. So let's say X gets the ball, running back gets the ball, comes running over here, boom, right here, non-specific antibodies, boom, tackle, dead, not going anywhere. But let's say it's a different play. Let's say they decide they, you know, we're going to run Y. So they run Y on the roundabout, coming from here, boom, it doesn't matter. Non-specific, we see the Y too. It doesn't matter. We're going to go after anything because it's non-specific. It's brilliant. These are brilliant antibodies you have as your natural immune system. What if it's a trick play? What if they toss it to A and over here tries to get through? Doesn't matter. Bam! Non-specific is going to go after the A variant too. This is how your immune system works, and it's fantastic. Now let's talk about what happens when we're given a vaccine. To the next one. We're now going to move into vaccine-induced antibodies. As he said, they're long-lived. They don't go away. This isn't a drug that's going to wear off 2 days from now. We say, you know what? You had an allergic reaction. We're not going to do that drug anymore. It is in you forever. There's no getting this thing out. And what did it just do? It created what he called specific antibodies. Specific antibodies is now what we're going to discuss. So now in this area, playing football, essentially everyone on the team has been told, you're looking for X. The antibody created, in this case, for the spike protein. The spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 that we first saw at the very beginning, before there's any variants, our vaccine is going to make you fight that really well. So how does that work? Well, it's great. The coach basically said, I know for a fact that X, the running back there, is going to get the ball. So everyone on the team, T on X. Great. So X gets the ball. Boom, comes through. It doesn't matter, man. They're all going to jump in there. Yeah, the vaccine's awesome. It totally stopped the virus. Okay? But now here is the problem he's talking about. This entire team can only respond to X. It only understands that it's specific. It's an antibody specific to the virus it's looking for. So what happens if Y gets the ball? What if the team, they know? It doesn't matter if the coach said it was going to be X. It doesn't matter. Y gets the ball. Y comes around, boom, goes through here, can go anywhere they want, does nothing. Boom, win. We're in the end zone. We just won. Virus wins the whole game because no one on the team was waiting for X, was planning for X. In fact, they were told, don't go near Y. Okay? But here's something that I didn't understand. I understood that, and we've talked about that basically on the show, not in this way. But it goes one step further. Here's what I did not understand about the immune system last week that I do now. When he says that the vaccine-induced antibodies are long-lived, it means they're going to be there forever. He also basically explains
that they are more robust. The virus-specific antibodies, the specific ones, they're more robust, and they outcompete your non-specific natural immune antibodies. So in this case, you do have some natural non-specific antibodies in there that could handle any one of the variants, but the problem is these guys are bullies. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're more specific, and they're ready to do their job. So if Y gets the ball and starts coming around, our non-specific antibody is going to want to jump in there. Unfortunately, our vaccine-induced is going to push this out of the way and become a blocker to make sure that virus gets all the way in and wins and gets the touchdown and could possibly leave you dead. Vaccine is bullying away your remaining natural immune system. You do have these, but they're never going to work again. Do you realize how horrifying this is? Now think about the hundreds of millions of people that are lining up around the world, that are lined up outside of stadiums right now because CNN and Tony Fauci just said, I love this vaccine. Well, Geert here, one of the leading scientists in vaccine and immunology in the world, is telling you, everybody getting the vaccine is destroying their innate immune system. Those immune antibodies that were non-specific, that could have handled any of those thousands of variants we just saw you. They're designed for it. By being vaccinated, you just assured yourself that there are no antibodies inside of you to fight the variants. So if we have strayed far enough away from the vaccine-induced variant that we're looking at, the original spike protein, everyone that is vaccinated is now in horrible, horrible trouble. They're going to be attacked by variants, and their bodies will not mount a defense. We are talking about carnage like we've never seen.
But the problem I'm talking about is a global problem. It's not an individual getting an adverse event. It's a global problem of making this virus increasingly infectious because we leave it all the time a chance and opportunity to escape in the immune system to drive it, to whip this up, you know, up to a level where the virus is so infectious that we can even no longer control it.
And he says, I am worried about a global event. What I am talking about is a global issue. And the global issue is the fact that we are helping this virus gain function. We are turning it into a killer in every single body that is getting it. Well, now what this vaccine is doing is it's turning hundreds of millions of people around the world into a gigantic gain-of-function laboratory. And where I have told you before that in nature, viruses tend to mutate to become less deadly because if they kill their host, they don't move on. In the evolution, they want to move on, so they stop killing their host. What he's saying is this isn't a natural pandemic. We have inserted ourselves here. We are now inserting a mechanism that we're teaching it to actually go the opposite direction. It's getting more deadly, and the way we're doing it, the other one will not compete. It's not going to move in the direction that a natural virus does because we're not acting naturally. We are putting immense pressure on it with an underperforming vaccine that is going to turn it into a Hulk. And his concern is that it will become so virulent and so deadly, there is nothing we can do to stop it. Now, listen to this.
I've seen the question many times, and quite frankly, I get asked the question. We're coming to a point where people are going to have to take these vaccines. That looks as though it's the reality, either in the context of work or in the context of travel. Based on what you're saying, they're in a lose-lose situation. What does this mean?
Well, what does this mean is very clear. Let's consider the consequences of this, both at a population level and at an individual level. As a matter of fact, it is detrimental, both on a population level as on an individual level. And I'm telling you why. I think the population level, I explained to you, we are increasingly facing highly infectious strains that already right now we cannot control, because basically what we are doing is when we vaccinate somebody, you're turning this person into a potential asymptomatic carrier that is shedding the virus. But at an individual level, you
is your immune system that you could ever imagine of. And that is your innate immune system. Because innate antibodies, the natural antibodies, the secretory IgM, will be outcompeted by these antigen-specific antibodies for binding to the virus. And so that is a long-lived suppression, and you lose every protection against any viral variant or coronavirus variant, etc. So this means that you are left just with no single immune response. It's known. Your immunity has become nil. It's all gone. The antibodies don't work anymore, and your innate immunity has been completely bypassed. And this while highly infectious strains are circulating. So, I mean, if that isn't clear enough, I really don't get it. And people do read, you know, what I posted, because it's pure science, pure science. And as everybody knows, I'm a highly passionate vaccine guy, right? And I have no criticism of the vaccines. But please use the right vaccine at the right place and don't use it in the heat of a pandemic on millions of people. We are going to pay a huge price for this. And I'm becoming emotional because I'm thinking of my children, of the younger generation. I mean, it's just impossible what we are doing. We don't understand the pandemic. We have been turning it in an artificial pandemic. Who can explain where all of a sudden all these highly infectious strains come from? Nobody can explain it. I can explain it. But we have not been seeing this during previous pandemics. During natural pandemics, we have not been seeing it because at every single time, there was immunity was low enough so that the virus didn't need to escape. So at the end of the pandemic, when things calmed down and it was herd immunity, it was still the same virus circulating. What we are now doing is that we are really chasing this virus, and it becomes increasingly infectious. And I mean, this is just a situation that is completely out of control.
And when a man who has made vaccines his whole life, that has run most of our vaccine programs around the world, and many of them, when he tells you, this vaccine is doing the worst thing of all. It is destroying your innate immune system. It's destroying your natural immune system that would not have any problem fighting variants, would be very good at it. No, it doesn't exist anymore. Your immune system is all gone. It's all gone. Meanwhile, it is fighting a war with a now deadly pathogen that the vaccine forced to be deadly. He doesn't tell you if the vaccine ends up stopping the infection and transmission, then some of the things that I'm worried about won't happen. He is telling you it has already happened. I am not hypothesizing in the future. I am telling you all of these variants that they are reporting on coming out of South Africa, coming out of Brazil, coming out of the UK. Guess why they're coming from there? Guess where our vaccine trials were from day one? We have been mutating this virus with this product. We have made a grave and dangerous error. And the question we've got to ask ourselves is, what are we going to do about it? Please share this video everywhere you can with every human you know. Think about it. You know, your pro-vaccine friends cannot argue with this video. They cannot say, oh, this is Bobby Kennedy or this is Sherry Tenbenny. This is one of their best and brightest that is warning the world. If we do not share this video, then we are complicit, that we will be complicit in what could lead to one of the most catastrophic mistakes ever made with this planet and with our species. Do you realize how horrifying this is?
Do you realize how horrifying this is? For real. It's really, like, what? Really? These are top, this is the man, this is the vaccine expert of the world, pretty much. Okay? This guy, Geert Van den Bosch. Check out yourlifeatrisk.com. You can find some stuff there. Yourlifeatrisk.com, and you won't believe it. And I find it so odd of this unbelievable push for this vaccine. Why the backlash against alternative treatments and the denial that alternative treatments exist. Regeneron, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and others. There's others. From what I heard, it's like maybe 31 different medications that seem to be working other than the vaccine. And my theory about the blackout on alternative treatments is because they know if there's a proven alternative treatment, then the vaccines cannot be approved by the FDA because they don't need the vaccine if there's alternate treatments. So they bash ivermectin, saying people are crazy. They're eating horse dewormer, and they show the box of the paste that you get at the feed store for your horse's worm. It's a paste, and you can safely take the horse paste. You just got to know the human dosing. You can't look at the pack and say, if every dose is, you know, 2 pounds of ivermectin horse deworming paste. No, it's not that. It's 3 milligram tablets prescribed to humans for like the last 20 years for other ailments, like hydroxychloroquine. 60 years, I believe, it's been out treating ailments such as malaria and rheumatoid arthritis. Decades of use, and here comes the pandemic. It works on the pandemic. This is a highly dangerous drug. You don't want to take it. It's horrible. And they're telling people to take pool chemicals. It's like, what? I don't get it, man. I don't understand. What's the payoff to these doctors? They used to take the Hippocratic Oath, who now take only the hypocritic oath. What happened to doctor-patient confidentiality and HIPAA laws? Now all of a sudden you want to know my medical information everywhere I go. Passport, please. Screw you. I'm not showing no passport. I'm not getting back. Information's out there. This audio that I just played you laid it out in serious specificity. It's not a joke. This vaccine is dangerous. There's no doubt about it. The vaccine is dangerous. You can go to the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting Service, or whatever it's called, at the CDC, and you can find all the information you want. It's there. We posted it a few times. I get tired of doing research for everybody. People need to do research for themselves. I go out on a limb sometimes, and I dig for a long, long time to try and find videos like this, you know? And I bring these guys on my show. I want to get this guy on it. I want to try to get this guy on, Dr. Peter McCullough. He recently testified in Texas at the Health and Human Services Committee meeting. It was back in March. So also was that interview with Geert. It was in March of 2021. So it's only, 4 months ago. These are fairly recent interviews in the realms of things. And this guy is testifying in front of the Texas Health and Human Services Committee meeting. There's so much going on, folks. And people are trying to tell us what's up. And for some reason, people have their ears clogged and they don't want to hear what's up. I don't understand it. I'm going to play this Peter McCullough now. I'll play just a little bit of this. You're not going to believe this. These vaccines are bad. This whole situation is crazy. And this guy, wait till you hear his credentials and what he's done. Dr. Peter McCullough, PhD.
Afternoon. I'm Dr. Peter McCullough, and I'm an internist and cardiologist and professor of medicine at Texas A&M. University School of Medicine. I'm on the Baylor Dallas campus, and I've been intimately involved in the response to COVID-19. Now, the opinions I'll express are those of my own and not necessarily those of my institution. I can tell you that in my field, I'm an academic doctor. I see patients, but I'm very involved in research. I'm the editor of 2 major journals. In my field, I'm the most published person in my field, which deals with the heart and the kidneys, in the world in history. And when COVID-19 hit, I saw it as our medical Super Bowl. And there were going to be doctors like Dr. Urso coming out of wherever they were to face the virus. And there were doctors in the hospital that just had to receive the virus. And then there were those who headed for the sidelines. And then there were those that were detractors against the pandemic. And so as I started to survey the literature, I had patients with heart and lung disease who needed urgent treatment. And I refused to let an illness, which lasted for 2 weeks at home, before they got sick enough to be hospitalized, I refused to let a patient languish at home with no treatment and then be hospitalized when it was too late. It was obvious. That was obvious in April that that was the case. So I used the best tools or drugs available at the time. And these are appropriately prescribed off-label. Remember, a label is an advertising label. A label isn't a scientific document. Sure, it's appropriately prescribed off-label use of conventional medicine to treat an illness. And I, in May, I put together a team of doctors because the group that was facing the pandemic to the greatest degree was in Milan, Italy, so most of them were in the Coracle Italian Research Network. We summarized all we knew about the available drugs, and we published our findings in the August 8th issue of the American Journal of Medicine. And the title of that paper was "The Pathophysiologic Basis and Rationale for Early Ambulatory Treatment." And it had a premise. There's two bad outcomes to COVID-19, hospitalization and death. The second premise, if we don't do something before the hospitalization, we can never stop it. We can never stop it. And I have to tell you, and I was the lead author in that paper, but we had dozens of authors from Italy, India, UCLA, Emory. We had the best institutions in the United States. I can tell you the interesting thing was there was 50,000 papers in the peer-reviewed literature on COVID. Not a single one told a doctor how to treat it. Not a single one. When does that happen? I was absolutely stunned. And when this paper was published in the American Journal of Medicine, it became a lightning rod. Oh, my gosh. It became the most cited paper in basically all of medicine at that time. The world started the world started knocking on my door. And I said, oh, my Lord, I just can't believe what became untapped. And I had never been on social media before. My daughter, who was home from law school, was talking to her about it. She said, well, why don't you make a YouTube video? So I made a YouTube video with four slides from the paper. This is a peer-reviewed paper published in one of the best medical journals in the world. Four slides. I even wore a tie and a suit, and she showed me how to record it in PowerPoint, and I posted it on YouTube. It went absolutely viral. And within about a week, YouTube said, you violated the terms of the community. And that's when Senator Johnson's office got involved in Washington. Said, oh, my gosh, this is important scientific information to help patients in the middle of this crisis, and social media is striking it down. Based on what authority? Well, one thing led to another, and I became the lead witness for the U.S. Senate testimony of November 19, 2020. And the reason why there was Senate testimony is because there was a near total block on any information of treatment to patients, a near total block. And so what had happened over time is that we had gotten into a cycle in America of no information on treatment. Patients actually think that the virus is untreatable. And so what happens is they go out to get a diagnosis. Now, I'm a COVID survivor. My wife in the galley is a COVID survivor. My father in the nursing home is a COVID survivor. You get handed a diagnostic test. It says, here, you're COVID positive. Go home. Is there any treatment? No. Is there any resources I can call? No. Any referral lines, hotlines? No. Any research hotlines? No. That's the standard of care in the United States. And if we go to any one of our testing centers today in Texas, I bet that's the standard of care. I bet that's the standard of care. No wonder we have had 45,000 deaths in Texas. The average person in Texas thinks there's no treatment. They honestly think there's no treatment. They don't even know about these EUA antibodies. You heard from a 90-year-old gentleman who got bamlanivimab. Terrific. Where's the focus? There's such a focus on the vaccine. Where's the focus on people sick right now? This committee ought to know where all these monoclonal antibodies are. They ought to know where all the treatment protocols are. They ought to have a list of the treatment centers in Texas that actually treat patients with COVID-19. So I led the initiative. The second paper was published in a dedicated issue of Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine. Now I had 57 authors, including Dr. Urso, Dr. Emmanuel, lead doctors in Houston, San Antonio, all over. And it was another worldwide paper. And now we have it updated, integrated. So, yes, we use drugs to affect viral replication. The antibodies are terrific. We can use intracellular anti-infectives in that box. We use corticosteroids or inflammatory drugs. The best anti-inflammatory drug is colchicine. You've probably never heard about it. In the largest, highest quality randomized trial, over 4,000 patients, double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial, there's a 50% reduction in mortality. No word of it. None. Complete block to anybody, colchicine. How can that be? How can that be? And then the most deadly part of the viral infection is thrombosis. So I have always treated my patients with something to treat the virus, something to treat the inflammation, and something to treat thrombosis, just as Dr. Urso had. And I have very, very sick patients, and I've lost two. But I have to tell you, what has gone on has been beyond belief. How many of you have turned on a local news station or a national cable news station and ever gotten an update on treatment at home? How many of you have ever gotten a single word about what to do when you get the hand of the diagnosis of COVID-19? No wonder. That is a complete and total failure at every level. Okay, let's take the White House. How come we didn't have a panel of doctors assigned to put all their efforts and stop these hospitalizations? Why don't we have doctors who actually treated patients get together in a group and every week give us an update? Why didn't we have that? Why didn't we have that at the state level? Zero. Why don't we have any reports about how many patients were treated and spared hospitalizations? From all the, I listened to 6 hours of testimony today. Zero. Zero. We have a complete and total blank spot on treatment. It is a blanking phenomenon. At least in the United States, there's some heroes. Now, the American Society of Physicians and Surgeons took the lead. They're the group. They've identified 35 treatment centers in Texas. They knew who they are. They have emergency hotlines. They helped Dr. Hall put together this very brief pamphlet, but there's more, an extensive one. We can pass it around to everyone that at least gives people half a chance to find out about information, okay? This is a complete and total travesty to have a fatal disease and not treat it. Now, the National Institutes of Health and the Infectious Disease Society of America started putting out guidelines on the treatment of COVID-19, and to this date, they nearly exclusively deal with the hospitalized patient. The two papers that I have published as the lead author and supported by wonderful people by Dr. Urso are the only publications in the peer-reviewed literature that tell doctors how to treat COVID-19 as an outpatient based on support of some scientific information. The only two. The Home Treatment Guide by the American Physicians and Surgeons is the only source of information available to patients on how to treat COVID-19 at home. The only source. So what can be done right here, right now? There's going to be more people that die in Texas, and it's an absolute tragedy. How about tomorrow? Let's have a law that says there's not a single result given out without a treatment guide and without a hotline of how to get into research. Let's put a staffer on this and find out all the research available in Texas, and let's not have a single person go home with a test result with their fatal diagnosis, sitting at home, going into 2 weeks of despair before they succumb to hospitalization and death. It is unimaginable in America that we can have such a complete and total blind spot. I blame the doctors for not stepping up. Where was the medical society stepping up and putting effort on this? How about from the federal and state agencies? There never was a single bit of group collaborative effort to stop the hospitalizations. Nobody even kind of thought about it. Bob Hall had me on a teleconference in April or May, and we're like, wait a minute. How come, where's UT Southwestern? I'm a graduate of UT Southwestern. Where's A&M? Where's the rest of the universities? How come we're not stopping this? How come we are not stopping this? But it gets worse, because in the paper I published in December of 2020, you know what we did? I had a terrific doctor from Brazil. We went through country by country by country and just asked the question, what are other countries doing? When was the last time you turned on the news and ever got a window to the outside world? When did you ever get an update about how the rest of the world is handling COVID? What's happened in this pandemic is the world has closed in on us. There's only one doctor whose face is on TV now. One. Not a panel. Doctors, we always work in groups. We always have different opinions. There's not a single media doctor on TV who's ever treated a COVID patient. Not a single one. There's not a single person in the White House task force that's ever treated a patient. Why don't we do something bold? Why don't we put together a panel of doctors that have actually treated outpatients of COVID-19 and get them together for a meeting? And why don't we exchange ideas? And why don't we say how we can finish the pandemic strongly? Isn't it amazing? Think about this. Think about the complete and total blind spot. So what happened? I can tell you what happened. What happened in around May, it became known that the virus was going to be amenable to a vaccine. All efforts on treatment were dropped. The National Institutes of Health actually had a multi-drug program. They dropped it after 20 patients, said we can't find the patients. The most disingenuous announcement of all time. And then Warp Speed went full tilt for vaccine development. And there was a silencing of any information on treatment. Any. Silencing. Scrubbed from Twitter, YouTube. Can't get papers published on this. You can't. We can't even get information out in our own medical literature on this. There's been a complete scrubbing. So this program has been one of try to reduce the spread of the virus and wait for a vaccine. And when we vaccinate, all efforts have to be on vaccination. And probably I have 4 hours of vaccination on here. Think about it as we sit here today, the calculations in Texas on herd immunity. The calculations are we're at 80% herd immunity right now with no vaccine effect, 80%. And more people are developing COVID today. They're going to become immune. People who develop COVID have complete and durable immunity. And a very important principle, complete and durable. You can't beat natural immunity. You can't vaccinate on top of it and make it better. There's no scientific, clinical, or safety rationale for ever vaccinating a COVID recovered patient. There's no rationale for ever testing a COVID recovered patient. My wife and I are COVID recovered. Why do we go through the testing outside? There's absolutely no rationale. I'd encourage this committee to actually look at what's being done and ask, is there any rationale? Is there any rationale for anything? Listen, there's plenty of COVID recovered patients. Let them forego the vaccine and let people who are clamoring for it get it. But at 80% herd immunity, in the vaccine trials, fewer than 1% in the vaccine and the placebo actually get COVID, fewer than 1%. The vaccine is going to have a 1% public health impact. That's what the data says. It's not going to save us. We're already 80% herd immune. If we're strategically targeted, we can actually close out the pandemic very well with the vaccine. But strategically targeted, people under 50 who fundamentally have no health risks, there's no scientific rationale for them to ever become vaccinated. Scientific rationale. One of the mistakes I heard today as a rationale for vaccination is asymptomatic spread. And I want you to be very clear about this. My opinion is a low degree, if any, of asymptomatic spread. Sick person gives it to sick person. The Chinese have published a study, British Medical Journal, 11 million people. They try to find asymptomatic spread. You can't find it. And that's been, you know, one of important pieces of misinformation. When Senator Hall called a conference call, what should we do in the Capitol when we reopened? I said, you know what? You know what we do at Baylor? You walk in and they zap your temperature. You got a temperature check and go in. Do we test everybody who walks in the Baylor hospital? No. Are they a lot sicker than everybody in this room? You better believe it. So why would we do something here at the Capitol that has absolutely positively no scientific rationale and then do it in this context? So my testimony as I sit here today is COVID-19 has always been a treatable illness. A very large study from McKinney, Texas, another one from New York City, show that when doctors treat patients early who are over age 50 with medical problems with a sequenced multi-drug approach with the available drugs, 4 to 6 drugs that are available to them, now the monoclonal antibodies are better, there's an 85% reduction in hospitalizations and death. 85%. 85%. I want you to remember that number, 85%. We have over 500,000 deaths in the United States. The preventable fraction could have been as high as 85% if our pandemic response would have been laser focused on the problem, the sick patient right in front of us. We're focused over here and focused over there and focused on masks and whatever. Laser focused, sick patient, treat them. We lost focus on the most fundamental thing. That's my testimony.
Yeah, thank you. I can tell how passionate you are and certainly been a leader in talking about preventive protocols and also the ambulatory stage. And I do think that has been missing, and it's been a concern because COVID-19 is going to be with us, right? I mean, I hope we're at 80% herd immunity. I don't know yet. I'll read your papers, but I appreciate that, and the message is that there are drugs out there that work.
There are therapies out there that work, but no single one works alone. And so the dismissive mistake was to do a very small study. Oh, we studied 200 patients, and we used ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and it didn't work. That's like cancer and picking one drug and saying, oh, it doesn't reduce cancer mortality. We never do that in cancer. We never did that in AIDS. We don't do it in hepatitis C. What we look for is signals of benefit and acceptable safety, and then we combine them. And that's all we've done. So, but this independent declaration, drug by drug, that drugs don't work, has been, and that's on us. That's been our medical house. That's been a giant error that we've made on our side. We never should have expected single drugs to reduce mortality, but drugs in combination against a fatal viral infection, we should have.
This entire session is learned from lessons. I know we're running short on time. Senator Hall, you have one question or?
Real quick, I'd asked the question earlier when Dr. Hellestat was here about the idea that fits in with what you've talked about, is that when we test someone, rather than just say, give them, yep, you're positive, you're negative, be on your way, that we at least provide them information of what we know out there can be used, not trying to play the role of doctor out there. Do you agree with Dr. Hellestat's interpretation that that should not be done because it's setting up a doctor-patient relationship and simply informing people or providing with over-the-counter drugs that so that we could possibly have the early treatment for these folks rather than wait till they show up in the hospital?
We could at least have a physician group approved a guide. The AAPS guide has been used in over 500,000 cases in the United States. In fact, the early treatment is probably what prevented us from overflowing the hospitals in the last quarter of the year. When I testified, I said, listen, we're on track. And I was very convinced of this. We're on track of overflowing our hospitals. Our breakpoint was 135,000 in the hospitals in the United States. We hit 128. Now, the curve started going down long before the vaccine. So I can tell you, herd immunity, long before the vaccine showed up, started to go down. But the early treatment kicked up. Ivermectin use skyrocketed. Hydroxychloroquine, monoclonal antibodies, as much as we could push them. Sadly, the monoclonal antibodies are still sitting on the shelf in a lot of places. But committees like this ought to be saying, listen, where are those monoclonal antibodies? Do we stock them at the nursing home? What are the big nursing home chains? What are the big urgent care chains in Texas? And what are they doing? What are their early treatment protocols? These are blank spots. I bet nobody here has even thought about this. This is really low-hanging fruit that we can tackle. The bottom line is a lot of doctors have checked out, and when patients call them, they say, I don't treat COVID. And when I asked those doctors, I said, you don't treat COVID? How come? They go, well, there's no treatment. I said, but do you call them 2 days later to see how they're doing? No. So what's that? That's not I don't treat COVID. That's I don't care anymore. That's a loss of compassion. So we have a crisis of compassion in our country in the medical field. That's in our house right now. But for every doctor that's ever told a patient that they don't treat COVID, okay, but then they call them 2 days later and help them get oxygen or see how they're doing? If the answer is no, that's the Hippocratic Oath going out. And that's on us. And I'm telling you, we have a real self-check to do in the House of Medicine.
Domino's, you can get 50% off all menu price pizzas when you place a first-time order on the Domino's app. It's our way of celebrating National Pepperoni Pizza Day all week. So download the Domino's app, order some pizza, and save some money. Valid September 20th to September 26th.
If there's no other business, Senator Cruz.
Well, I appreciate the sentiments of comedy and bipartisanship and the bipartisan lunch, but I want to take a minute and reflect on an aspect of how this committee is proceeding that has not reflected that spirit. The chairman is aware of my concerns and the concerns of a number of members of this committee that the way the Judiciary Committee has proceeded in the year 2021 has broken with past practice and broken with past norms on this committee and has done so in a way that has been partisan and has undermined the important role of the Senate Judiciary Committee. As you know, back in March, when Vanita Gupta was before this committee, Chairman Durbin chose to break Rule 4 of the committee, which states that it takes a majority vote, including one vote from a member of the minority, in order to bring debate to a close. That had no precedent in the history of this committee. We then saw yet a second opportunity concerning Toby Heitens, nominated to be a judge on the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, where the total questioning for that lifetime nomination to the Court of Appeals was 18 minutes, even though my staff and the staff of another senator have both conveyed to the chairman that we were en route to the committee for the hearing. The chairman gaveled down that hearing after just 18 minutes of questions. And then secondly, we saw this pattern continue again just recently, just last week. Just last week, the committee held a hearing for Elizabeth Preloger, the nominee to be Solicitor General of the United States. Solicitor General is one of the most important positions in any administration. Solicitor General is often referred to as the 10th Justice. And yet, the hearing this committee held for the nominee for Solicitor General allowed precisely 20 minutes of questioning. After the debacle of the nominee for the judge for the Fourth Circuit, Chairman Durbin told this committee that he intended to conduct things differently, to actually have some acknowledgement of comedy. 20 minutes for a Solicitor General nominee, and I would note that hearing was held not only at the same time as multiple other hearings of committees, and every member on this committee serves on multiple other committees, and so you have to be in multiple committee hearings at the same time. That committee hearing was also at the exact same time as a floor vote. So I had fully intended to come and question the nominee for Solicitor General. There were serious questions about the conduct of the Department of Justice and ongoing litigation that nominee is responsible for, and yet 20 minutes, and my staff conveyed to the chairman's staff that I was on the floor voting and intended to come back and raise questions. But before I could physically get back here, the chairman gaveled it down. And to put it in perspective, because I'm getting eye rolling from the chairman right now, this is wildly out of step with the precedent of this committee. And I'll give an example. In 2001, Ted Olson was the nominee to be Solicitor General of the United States. Ted Olson, the questioning for Ted Olson lasted 3 hours and 37 minutes. At the time, Senator Schumer and Senator Durbin both questioned for 15 minutes each. Senator Leahy questioned for nearly 20 minutes. And here's what Chairman Durbin said at the time after 3 hours and 37 minutes. I want to quote Chairman Durbin. "I do sincerely regret that we have two nominees today, because 15 minutes is not enough for posts of this importance to be considered in tandem." Chairman Durbin was right 20 years ago. And this is now a pattern three times in a row of running roughshod over the rights of this committee to question nominees. And listen, I recognize there's a Democratic majority, the barest majority humanly possible, but there is one. But the conduct of Chairman Durbin is wildly out of step with the conduct of Chairman Leahy before him, with the conduct of Chairman Graham before him, with the conduct of Chairman Grassley before him. And there will come a time, particularly for the new members on this committee who have not yet had the opportunity to serve in the minority on this committee, there will come a time when the gavel is on the other hand. And so the fact that a Democratic chairman can ramrod through partisan proceedings 20 minutes objectively is grossly inadequate for a nominee.
This is incredible stuff, folks. Can you believe it? These are experts. This is Ted Cruz. This stuff. It's all bogus, and they're forcing us into it. It's like, really? What? I can't believe it. So, folks, really do a lot of consideration. Think about stuff. Do the research. Look into everything. Please, don't just take their word because Dr. Fauci said it on TV, that they played it in the news. You know, it's pretty incredible. And I just don't know, man. Where we go from here. I have no idea where to turn. So, right now I'm going to check something out here. Someone had gotten in touch with me. This nice lady wrote a book. I'm in the process of thumbing through it. She's going to join us next week. I just want to get all the information squared away. I think I posted it here. Let's see. She is an author. She wrote a book. It's going to be a good one. I gotta find it. Her name is Janet Phelan. She sent me a copy of her book. And the name of the book is, I'm going to tell you here in a second, The Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic by Janet Phelan. We're going to have her on next week. She's going to talk about this book. I'm in the process of thumbing through it, reading it. It's quite interesting how this all pans out in the end. There's people that have given you the information to make an informed decision. My decision is no vaccine. And, folks, I want to make sure that you all tune in every Thursday at 8 o'clock. If I'm not here, I always seem to come back. I've been doing this now, almost coming up on 9 years. We got over 1,000 episodes at the network at blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Nation. You head on over there, you can listen to over 1,000 episodes. We've had some great people on the show. We had some great shows. We had, United Patriots Uprising with Gary Binford, which is now heard on all your podcast stations. He's out there now doing his thing. And we had, I forget his name. We had another show came on, The American Experience was on Sundays. They left. They stayed with us briefly and left. But we still have American Allegiance with Kevin White on Wednesdays. I want to give a shout out to Kevin and prayers for his wife for healing. She's suffering now with COVID. And with all this hoopla and everything that's going on in this world and in this country and the madness and Afghanistan and our troops and everybody, there's a hotline you can call if you need to talk to somebody. Call 1-800-273-8255. It's a suicide prevention hotline. Don't be one of the 22 if you're a veteran. The help that you need, it's there for you. 1-800-273-8255. I try to read that now every week. I think it's important. We have a lot of people out there suffering from depression and PTSD from the battlefield and all kinds of things. And we don't want that to happen. So give that call, line a call if you're in distress and you need help. Folks, people are giving you the information. You can get the information to make an informed decision. I would bet against the vaccine. You heard the experts tonight. I played some experts. I played some seriously educated people, people that are teaching in universities and creators of vaccines who are telling you. And why are they suppressing this information? They suppress it so that you can't get it. So you want to really dig deep. Do some serious research on all of this crap and make an informed decision. I would vote against getting vaxxed. I believe the vax is no good. I believe the vax is bad. This is my opinion. You want to get it, you go ahead and get it. Listen to Geert Vandenbosch, yourlifesatrisk.com. Check it out. Check it out today. You want to make sure that you're getting all the information you need. So, folks, join us again next week as we have, I turned it off, Janet Phelan. And at the breaking point of history, how decades of U.S. duplicity enabled the pandemic. We'll have that next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, on the Patriot Nation radio show. Be sure to tune in and join us as we rock it out. And with that, I'm going to say goodnight, and God bless you. God bless America. This is the Star Spangled Banner. Please rise and Dig it. God bless you, and God bless America.